This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Ted and Marion Outerbridge are touring magicians who perform across Canada at performing arts centers. They specialize in performing in these theaters, and getting into them, I think, is quite interesting. During this podcast, you'll have an opportunity to see what it's like behind the scenes as a touring professional. It's not always easy and just lights and glamour, and it's not just practice either. There's a lot of hard work that goes into not just the performing, but also the choreography, the designing, the selling, and everything else that goes with it. So if you were thinking about perhaps being a big-time stage magician, well, you might want to hear some of the behind-the-scenes that goes into all of this that Ted and Marion share here on this podcast. I want to also particularly thank John Gaspard, who is the author of the Eli Marks Mystery Series, and in particular, he has donated two free audiobooks from Audible.com of his first book called The Ambitious Card, an Eli Marks Mystery. John has been a guest here on a couple of times, and we have discussed his books, and he's got a new one that he's working on that will be coming out sometime in the near future, hopefully this year in 2016. I believe it's called The Linking Rings. At the end of this podcast, we will announce the names of the winners who have registered and entered the contest. And in this particular podcast, you will notice at the bottom of the blog that there is an opportunity for you to enter a new contest. And we'll explain more about that at the end of this podcast, but just a sneak preview, it is a complete lecture bundle from the Outerbridges. So let me introduce Ted and Marion Outerbridge, who join me for some late-night martinis following his lecture here in Houston, Texas. Let me suggest that if you want to pause this and go and shake up your own martinis, you can enjoy them along with us. So now, please enjoy Ted and Marion Outerbridge here on The Magic Word. Hello and cheers from Mystic Haven. Here we are in Houston, Texas. This is Scott Wells with MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have as my guests here joining me for some martinis. I've got Ted and Marion Outerbridge all the way from Canada.
Montreal. Snowland.
Yeah, we're loving it here. The weather is awesome.
Yeah. Now, we would call this like 75 degree weather, which is what to you, like 12 or something? What is this in Celsius?
Oh, 24 Celsius.
Yeah, 24. Okay. Yeah, okay.
It's fantastic. We love it.
Yeah.
No, I'm taking photographs of my dashboard, which has the temperature.
The temperature on it?
You know, yes. Sending it back home.
Yeah, yeah. I took pictures of flowers today just for my friends at home.
I saw that picture on Facebook, the pictures of azaleas. It's about that time, you know, the azaleas are starting to pop out already here.
Yeah, not in Montreal in particular.
For those who are listening to this at a later time when it's broadcast, this actually is being recorded on February the 1st. So tomorrow, or actually in just a couple of hours, it's going to be Groundhog's Day for us. You guys probably don't celebrate Groundhog's Day.
Oh, yeah. We do. Oh, yeah. We have it as well, yes.
If what do you call it?
Groundhog's Day.
Same thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Didn't know if you call it like prairie dog or something.
I believe we call it Groundhog Day A.
A.
Because we're in Canada.
That's
Groundhog
right.
A.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So we're talking about traveling and working during the winter months, that you guys, of course, are known as being touring theatrical magicians, specifically working in large stage theaters, you know, like Copperfield and others would work, you know, these kinds of things. But that's not kind of how you started. I mean, you started as a close-up magician then also, kind of?
Well, I was the birthday party guy. I was Magic Ted, and I got into the restaurant circuit. I guess I was 16 years old, and I did restaurants for at least 10 years. I blew up 7.3 million balloon animals, and I did the Ambitious Card until my fingers bled, and I loved it, and I still...
Now, when you did balloon animals, were those in the days that when they had already invented a the balloon pump, or were you blowing them up with just your lungs?
I was a purist, so I did not use a pump.
Yeah, me either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back when I used to do that, I remember working at a outdoor festival one time, and that was all I was doing, just blowing up balloons. I sat on a on this little bar stool or something, and I remember I had blown up two gross balloons. That's 288 balloons. Yeah. And then the next day I went to the doctor, you know, because of my hemorrhoids. And he said, holy cow. It was like, I didn't know I'm blowing out both ends here, you know? Not easy back to do that.
No, that's a lot. Too gross is a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, within a 3-hour period, yeah.
Wow.
I cannot match that record.
Up to this day, I'm still not capable of blowing up
you
the
blow
balloon.
Balloons? Yeah, that's a difficult thing. I have to admire people who, because I don't think I could do that anymore. It's quite the lung power. So anyhow,
you were
kind of doing all that.
Restaurants, which got me lots of other jobs. Mm-hmm. I'd do restaurants, and then I'd get birthday parties and private
What was your favorite
parties.
Close-up trick? What was your go-to trick?
You Ambitious know, Card.
Was it? Okay.
I really enjoyed Ambitious Card.
Did you have it signed and everything, or did you have a sticker put on it? How did you? What was your little thing that you...
I had it signed, and then I ended up, at the end of the routine, I had a Mullica wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd do card to wallet at the end.
Okay. Yeah. I'd say that's a good addition, I mean, a good finish you know, for that then, too.
Yeah.
And then give that out. You know, years ago, I would use a sticker. I don't know why I use stickers, because I guess I could reuse the card again, you know, because I would just peel that off.
And right.
Then I realized that some people were saying, well, you know, that sticker must have moved from one card to another. And I said, no, you know, it can actually peel off, but it does anyhow. So I thought, well, okay, I'm being cheap.
No, I would just get it signed, and sometimes I'd get phone numbers. And then at the end of the night, I'd go through the deck and check for phone numbers.
Yeah.
And then I'd sell those cards to the waiters in the restaurant. So,
Well, you know, there have been some pretty cool tricks invented in order to get girls' phone numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably not a much easier way that, you know, a magician would have the easiest way to try to pick up women, I would think, you know, particularly if you're
Well,
young
it
guy.
Worked,
so
obviously.
It obviously it did.
But we need to use our powers for good.
For good.
And we have to be careful.
And obviously you did, because you got a good woman here.
I sure did.
You didn't have to go all the way to Germany. She came to Canada for you, though.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Basically.
Yeah, I actually came back to Canada. And was a friend of mine had written me a postcard at Christmas time saying, okay, I'm working with this illusionist, and we're waiting for you now to your return from Austria. Because I was choreographing a ballet in Austria, Salzburg, and I wanted to go back on the stage, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to still do a couple of shows here and there. Mm-hmm. So when I returned, I called up my friend and I said, okay, this is great. I'm going to call him, but what's his name? Because she only gave me his phone number, but no name.
Didn't know who to talk to.
So I didn't know who to talk to when I phoned. So she then told me, oh, it's Ted. You got to call for Ted. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I phoned him up and we...
From Germany?
No. I was back in Canada. So after my contract finished, as soon as I got home, the first minute, I called my friend to find out his name. Mm-hmm. So then I phoned him up, and then we sort of settled on a date to meet. And he says, oh, and I'm a tall blonde guy with a gray coat. I'm like, okay, I like to wear black, and I have red hair. At the time, I was like red. And I'm going, this sounds like a date. This is weird. So, like a blind date. Uh-huh. So anyway, long story short, I show up in this coffee shop where we're supposed to meet. And an hour later, he still wasn't there, but I had a good book. So I kept reading my book, and it was snowing outside really heavily, but I was taking the metro. So I didn't know how bad the roads really were. Mm-hmm. And then he showed up.
Yeah, there was an ice storm that day, and I was calling, trying to reschedule, because when I looked out my window,
before cell
I saw
phone
the cars on the highway were like crawling along. Mm-hmm. And I lived half an hour outside of Montreal.
Yeah.
So I knew, you know, I was going to be an hour and a half late.
But you couldn't get in touch with her, obviously.
No,
no, I
didn't have a cell phone in those days.
And,
17
Marion
years ago.
Left, so. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
And so you were apologizing immediately came in.
Yeah. So I was very late, and I apologized. And
then we sat there for 2.5 hours talking.
Wow.
Like
drinking
a lot.
Coffee,
drinking
talking.
Coffee.
About
and
magic
talking.
Or just life? Or
about,
just...
like, no, what I have been doing, what he has been doing. It was sort of like my interview, right?
I was about to say, he was really interviewing
like,
his job.
Exactly. It was like a job interview, but I told him from the job that I just had come and, like, what I was doing and that I had a career as a professional dancer.
And did you bring, like, a pictures or a video?
Yeah, I did. I had my portfolio with me with all my dancing shots and, like, my headshot, my whatever. I had it all with me. And
because that had been a date, you probably would have left, like, an hour. I mean, like, 15 minutes is not.
Exactly.
This is a job.
So this is
money.
A job, and I had my book with me, and I saw it was snowing, so I knew the weather was bad, and I was like taking the metro system, so the metro system is all underground, so I had no trouble getting there.
Yeah.
But of course, if you drive in a car, it was more of a problem, and I figured, oh, I'm going to sit here for 2 hours, and I'm leaving, because my book was good, and I still had a dance class to attend that night, too, so I was like, okay, I'm all right, and then he showed up, so I showed him all my material, and then Ted goes, okay, well, Rachel told me everything about you, and I think you would be perfect for my show, he goes. But you got to fit in the lady in the puzzle prop. Mm-hmm. Like, so you have to fit in one of my boxes. And I said, I just looked at him and I started cracking up because I was laughing so hard just because I have danced with big name companies. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, I danced in Russia, I danced in Europe, I was in Chicago, and all of a sudden I need to fit in a box. That's where my career goes. And I just thought it was the funniest thing. So I was laughing and couldn't stop laughing.
You can fit in this box, you've got the job.
And so he's like looking at me like, what's wrong with this? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you know, this is like...
You've never worked with a magician before, obviously.
I have worked with a magician before. Hmm. And I actually have worked in a very large show with 20 dancers. And he had two assistants. And it was in Germany, and in Germany's oldest variety park. I was working for Lee Peeville. His real name is Leif Hansen. And he was a magician from Denmark. And he performed at this park for 25 years. He was Germany's, or even longer, he was Germany's biggest magician.
Is that Tivoli? No. Tivoli? Or what? No, Tivoli's not.
No. No, it was Fantasia Land was the park's name.
Fantasia Land is the theme park.
It's the theme park.
His name is Lee Peeville.
Lee Peeville.
That was his stage
name. Yeah, that was his stage name. And he worked in the Winter Garden. We had the Winter Garden rebuilt, basically, from Berlin, that Winter Garden, like, in a smaller scale, on a smaller scale. But still, it seated, like, several hundreds of people, and we did four shows a day.
Wow.
So that was my first experience. So I did...
And you were a box jumper for him.
I was a dancer, actually, in his show, and all the dancers had to do one illusion where we were in a plexiglass box dancing away and then in midair, and then the curtain fell down and the curtain fell down again, and then there was a tiger in the plexiglass box. And so that was my very first experience with a box. That was the only box I ever would have done. Mm-hmm. So, and I swear to myself that I would never do that again. Not because I love the animals, and I think every illusion that has big cats is very spectacular in the show. It's just because for me, thinking of myself as when I'm in this box and all of a sudden there's a tiger above me, if this tiger lets go, you just pray that every corner is sealed in that particular box.
Yeah.
And when he lets rip, when he lets one of those ones go, you can't smell it. And it's not like the smell of a chicken.
Yeah.
And so all the dancers in the wing would just watch the opening of the first, it was the second illusion, but would watch this illusion. And they all just look, and when it happens, they all go like, high five, you know, we have another hit. But, so after 8 months performing this illusion once a week for four shows a day, I figured I don't need to do that again. So when I actually met Ted, the first question was, do you have any animals? And he says, yes, I do. I have a chicken in the show. And I thought that was the greatest thing ever.
You can live with that.
I can totally live with a chicken.
I was touring with Zelda, the psychic chicken.
So, but yeah, back to my box, real quick. I'm sorry. Really quick back to my box was that, so I now went over to his house and, I had to climb into this box, and Rachel, the girl that was our matchmaker, so to say, she fits beautifully into this box, and I'm the same size. So for me, it was like, of course I will fit that box, no question. So I got into the box, and you don't know how I got stuck. I was so stuck, I said, I got in, but I don't think I'm going to get out of it. So long story short, real quick. Ted almost thought he had to take apart the prop. He had to take off the top part. But I managed to get somehow
out. You couldn't
out.
Unfold your legs.
I couldn't unfold my legs. I couldn't get them back in. And I said, okay, how does she do it? And Ted's answer to that brilliant question was, oh, I don't know. She just gets in there. So,
well, I didn't know. Yeah. I've never
been in
that illusion.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just built it.
So I decided, okay, let me try this again. And I fit. Mm-hmm. So I got the job. And that was 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we would not have met.
Wow. That's a great story. So obviously it worked. And
it worked. Yeah. And now I'm still dancing and I love it.
Now, does he build them? I know that, Ted, you have a carpenter shop and you build illusions. You build them around her size, don't you?
And I measure Marion very carefully and then I build it smaller.
Okay.
And then she fits somehow.
Exactly. I just wanted to add that. Usually it's always an inch at least smaller.
It was smaller. I mentioned that because that I had been given that advice many years ago when I bought my first zigzag, that someone said, you just don't buy a zigzag off the shelf. It has to be something that's going to fit your assistant, you know, that you, whatever her height, you know, how tall or short she is. Mm-hmm. And so that's exactly what I did, is that I sent this guy who was the builder my wife's height, and he built that, and so she fit just beautifully. Where I found that others didn't. Had I not heard that advice, and for those who might be listening to this who are getting into illusions, you may just think, "Hey, I'm going to buy so and so's illusion that he's selling online or through Magic Surplus or something on Facebook." Mm-hmm. You can get it, and you find out she doesn't fit, and well, there's a reason, you know.
Exactly, it's very important.
Yeah, it depends on the illusion. You want to know. I mean, if you're buying a used illusion.
Especially.
You know, who was in that illusion? How big are
they?
How heavy are they?
Right.
How tall are they?
Yeah.
But we build a mock-up using Coroplast or cardboard or something.
Do you? Okay.
And that way we can avoid, you know, the disaster of having a finished illusion that's the wrong size.
And so you really do, after you build that, then try to see what is the minimum amount that you can make and make her fit still in there?
Yeah. I have a couple places where it's really snug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
you're not claustrophobic?
No.
That's a key.
It's a good
That's
key.
Important.
It's very good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the illusions I have to get into, I customize with a battery-powered fan and whatever I can to make it comfortable for me while I'm sitting there. Have the fan blasting on me. And we try to make that special place as comfortable as possible.
Well, you see, because always of the top of Act 1 in our show and also of the top of Act 2 in our show, it's me starting on stage while Ted is somewhere hidden. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually the lucky one because every time, like, you know, I do a couple of numbers or I do a little dance or I do a little choreography here and there, and then the next thing is there comes Ted and I produce him. So therefore, he's the one that has to sometimes sit for like a couple of minutes in the illusion.
I mean, every magician probably dreams of making their dramatic appearance on stage. It's exciting to think, wow, you know, suddenly the magician appears. Mm-hmm. But the downside is you are in a special place,
cramped space
for several minutes before the show. I'm claustrophobic. I thought I could never do that.
Yeah.
But I, you know, got comfortable with my special place. I actually like it. I've actually almost fallen asleep before the show.
Wow.
Because I'm like, I like my special place now. It's a great little compartment.
Except the one time when we actually performed a big part of our show on the ice. As a pre-game show for the Fredericton Canadiens, hockey team, hockey league. And we performed literally on the ice. And the clock tower is 12 feet tall, I believe. And it had to be wheeled all across the ice.
With you in it.
With Ted in
it. Yeah, I'm loaded into the compartment slash special place. They wheel it out on the ice. So now I'm lying on a piece of sheet aluminum, which is approximately half an inch above
the ice.
The ice. And they leave me there for
And then they start talking for
five minutes. So I was so cold when it was time for me to appear, I could barely move. Yeah. I was so cold. And so I somehow climbed out of the
with a
load
cold
chamber.
Fanny. Cold butt.
I was, my whole body was cold. I was like...
It was cold.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a dramatic appearance.
It was
a very
dramatic appearance.
I guess I warmed up by the end of our show.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was the first time for me to perform on the ice.
Yeah.
Several illusions.
Well, it's interesting that the two of you actually will be a box jumpers, as opposed to most illusionists. It seems like we'll just have the women get in there, and rarely does the guy get in. Mm-hmm. He's the box pointer, if you will.
Right, right. Yeah. We actually, like Ted, I believe, is doing 7 illusions, and I'm doing 7.
Wow.
So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I know, like, our disembodied princess is an alarm clock. Mm-hmm. I go in instead of Marion.
Yes.
I appear in a clock tower. I appear in a cardboard box. Mm-hmm. I end up in a straitjacket in another box.
The assistant's revenge, Rebose. I strap you in first.
Yeah. So we take turns.
We take turns.
We present the show as two partners performing magic.
Right. So do you also then, Marion, come up with some of the ideas for the presentations?
Oh, yes.
In conjunction? It's not just him saying, hey, I got this idea,
and
you're out shopping.
What happens is, like, we're a team. Like, we brainstorm. Like, as you mentioned, like, we travel thousands and thousands of miles every year. Mm-hmm. So while sitting in the truck and I'm knitting and Ted is driving, we're talking about our show and our, like, ideas of, like, a new concept. And so for us, this is, like, really fun. Like, so we have missed many exits, but we
I
always,
love brainstorming.
Yeah, but
it's
we
so
always
exciting.
Brainstorm.
Developing
and
new magic.
I usually come up with like something completely ridiculous because my fantasy is just going totally out to lunch sometimes. And so, and then I go, okay, now make this work. And then Ted goes like, this is impossible. And then I go like, no, I don't think it is. So let's see how we can make this work. And that's how we come up with a lot of our
ideas. When you have these concepts, are there things that when you're on the road like that, that you see something that triggers it, or is it
something?
Absolutely.
It can be that, or like Ted was saying in the lecture today, like, you know, we were in Argentina for our honeymoon, and then next thing you know, it's like we're having a tango flotante, which is like a floating tango. Mm-hmm. So to tango music.
Right.
And we got this great idea. We were sitting in this restaurant, and the waiter was not as clumsy, obviously, as our waiter in the show, but he was sort of like a little bit of a little klutz. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, this is a great idea. So he's like accidentally dragging the tablecloth with him. So I'm like after him, and I'm sitting on the table, and now Ted pushes me down. I'm like, what's going on? Next thing I know, I start floating.
Floating.
So we have a reason. And instead of the hoop, we're using a scarf, because in tango, they sometimes wear like the scarf. So instead of the hoop passing, which would be a prop again, Ted is using his scarf that we worked into our choreography at the beginning of this piece, you know? So we were like, not dueling, but we were dancing with the scarf.
Yes.
And so it became an additional meaning, and now the scarf came back to be a hoop. And so we sort of start brainstorming on things. And
that traffic thing.
Yeah, exactly. The Magic Alley. Like when we walked into these back alleys, it was really nice. And and so we discovered, like, you know, beaten up garbage cans and like a lot of trash around. So I'm throwing a lot of trash on the stage. And we have these street lights or barricade lights, which we call them. And then the cardboard box that you find around, like, and then we have a packing crate, and all of it Ted built. So it's beautiful.
Right.
So,
well, do you come up, although Ted, you're working with the construction of it, do you help then also, Marion, as far as how that it would be built, some of the technical part of it? I mean, like, for an example, that traffic barricade.
I worked at Morrissey Magic. I turned 8,000 zombie gimmicks, and so I'm making, you know, a zombie gimmick for Marion that will fit her hand, and adjusting the length of the gimmick to fit her arm. But I'm the builder. Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. And all the technical, all the what's going to work. I mean, that the beauty of that, when you explain that in the lecture this evening about how that all works, without going into any detail here, obviously, but just it sounds like it is very well made. That what is it called again?
We call it the floating barricade light.
Barricade light, right.
But we toured with it for 12 years.
Yeah.
And when we're on tour, you know, we can't repair props. We're on tour. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. You carry things with you to repair?
We do have tools. Yeah, we do tour with tools. So, yes, we can make repairs.
Have you had a situation ever where something has been broken beyond repair and you think, I'm going to have to put in something else to replace this illusion and then repair it when I get back home?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, we'll drill out rivets and put in new rivets.
Yeah.
And,
but there hasn't been anything that has fallen out the back end and the cars run over.
There's never been anything that we had to, you know, cut from the show.
Yeah.
It's the repairs we've done have been pretty simple.
And when you do the shows, do you always have the same kind of thing? And I mentioned that because I mentioned Copperfield earlier, for an example. When he would tour, which I don't think he does anymore, so he stays at the MGM there at the Grand in Vegas, but he used to say in his brochure that you would buy the program, saying, here are the things that will be in the show, subject to change. So there may only be three out of the six that he's listed that are going to be there.
Okay.
Because he kind of rotates things in and out. My question is that to you, do you have the same show, or do you have a thing that kind of the next night you might rotate and do something different for a different audience?
For us, we have basically the A show and the B show, depending on the venue.
On the same tour?
Yeah.
Depending on the venue. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some things you can or can't do.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
If we're in a small venue and we can't fit the whole show, then we go to plan B. And so we'll cut out our opening number. Our opening number is called the Museum of Time, and it has three big illusions in it, and it lasts about 5 minutes. So if we're in a really small theater, we will cut that number from the show, and we'll open with the Time Machine instead, just because of space limitations.
Right. Okay.
So it's just that's the only reason we do it. If there's not enough room in the theater to fit our full
show. We change the order of our show.
Because our show is, we have a lot of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many tons?
I don't know what it is, 15,000 pounds or something.
15,000 pounds.
Okay.
But it's, there's room on stage in most venues, but it's the wing space. Is there room in the wings to store mm-hmm. all the illusions? Mm-hmm. And we'll pack things up during intermission. They'll go back on the truck. During intermission, we'll rotate things.
We have
to do whatever we can to fit the show into the theater. But
yeah.
That's the only issue.
So you got people actually packing up the show.
Not packing it particular up, just like moving it all into the truck to have space again backstage.
That makes sense.
Like we would like literally have the main curtain closed during intermission and then get all the illusions that we just did on stage and then wheel the other ones out and then rotate them so that like, you know, the ones that were whatever in the truck come now out of the truck and the ones that were backstage go now in the truck.
Right.
So if like wheeling them all up the ramp and they just sit there till the end of the show.
Right. When you don't have
exactly,
the room.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. When we don't have the room and at the end after the show is over, then all the illusions will be brought back out from the truck and taken apart.
Yeah. Well, you've answered one of my questions. I was going to ask about having an intermission because some shows seem like go straight, but you have an hour, take a break, then come back for a half hour. What do you do?
We do 45 to 50 minutes, and then we do a 15 to 20 minute intermission, and then we go back for another 40 minutes.
Okay.
That's our our formula.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of theaters like a 20 minute intermission because they want to sell drinks at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Some theaters prefer 15. We need a 15 minute intermission.
Just to rotate all the props.
20 is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we want to deliver our full show.
Sure.
If we don't, it's because there's not enough room.
Huh.
In the theater.
Yeah.
And when you do go on tour and you have all these theaters lined up, typically how many days do you stay and play in a town before you move on?
Well, unfortunately, if we have more than one show in the same venue, we're very happy.
Okay.
It's usually
it's one and out.
One or maybe two.
Maybe
two. Do you have like a matinee or anything?
Yeah, like for school. Sure. Sometimes the schools come all in.
During a school day?
Yes, during a school day in the morning, they get all bussed in.
See, here we have like the matinees on Saturday and Sunday. You know, they don't really let the schools go to see a show.
Yeah. No, we actually...
We have a study guide for schools, and it talks about lots of things that the students can look at in the show, you know.
Oh.
The theme is time, so how many timekeeping devices did you see in the
so
show?
So it's educational.
Yes.
You kind of pitch
what is a time capsule?
So it's kind of a school show in a way.
Yes.
That, and so guys
we've tried
pitch
to,
that. Okay.
Yeah, we've tried to pounce on all the educational angles and promote it as a school.
And so let's say, again, that you're doing one, maybe two shows, and then you're packing up and then moving on to the next one. So in the span of a period of the tour, is that like 16, 18, 52 dates? I mean, what's reasonable? What do you normally would...
We're touring Canada.
Yeah.
Population density is not that great
in
Canada.
No, but it's pretty far apart.
So we do lots of driving.
A lot of driving.
Everyone wants us on Friday and Saturday
of course.
Sunday.
Or Thursdays. Thursdays still work, too.
No one wants Monday.
No.
So...
And you don't have to pay union labor problems? Or, I mean, you have to pay... like here that... The unions are going to be requiring you at certain times or certain hours, and they've got breaks or, you know, whatever. Do you have to, union issues up there like
we
have in the U.S.?
We're selling our show to theaters, and the theaters present our show.
Yeah.
So we're not involved in paying
that at all.
The crew.
No. So if they take a break, then...
That schedule is worked out ahead of time.
Okay.
It's part of the contract. It's in our technical writer outlines the time we need to set up.
Okay.
And we... You know, so that's resolved ahead of time.
And you're glad you've got that. I'm sure a lot of times it saved you.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, we play by the rules when we're working with union crews. And
I guess my question was just that there are union crews up there just as there are here.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
So anyhow, going on as far as how many dates typically would be in a tour? I know it varies, but...
For us, I guess per week... Maybe four dates, four shows.
Okay. That's quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're out for 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've done, I think 3 months was the longest we ever did.
3 months was the longest we ever did, and we realized that might be a little long. It might be better to do like a month and a half.
Why, are you just getting tired, or?
Not us, but it's like more our crew, because they want to see their spouses, or, you know.
Their family, sure.
Their family, they want to go home too, and then it does get tiring. So for us, I think the best thing is one time we had our tour for like 6 weeks. We had 1 week off because it was Easter break, and then there was nothing happening for a week. So we told our crew, we either fly you guys home and you can take jobs at home for a week and then we fly you back out, or we fly your girlfriends or wives over.
Right.
And then you can travel Vancouver. It's a beautiful area. That's where we were.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we finished, and that's where we would pick it up the week after.
Yeah.
And so they both decided right away, no, we want our girlfriends over. And so we flew them out, and they were off on their own for a week. And that helped everybody, because then we were all fresh again to start up again. Because for us, Ted and I, when we're on the road, we never want to go home. And so we love being together, but I know those two, you know, they miss their family.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah, people need to see their partner,
and
wife.
And it's kind of hard. And I don't blame them. I would feel the same way.
Sure.
So it's nice when we sort of can find a nice middle.
Well, have you thought about doing more cruise ships?
We would love to go back. We were trying, actually, at one point again to go back on a ship, but it seems they're not really looking at illusionists at this moment.
They're looking more comedians,
exactly.
I think.
Comedians and fly-on acts that just can come
acts.
On. Maybe with one illusion or whatever. But they're more looking at that, and we're open to that as well, but our heart is still in the illusions, of course.
Yeah.
We're open for anything. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's like, let's have fun. I mean, Ted's son is 25, and he's a great guy. He's just graduating now from university.
In Montreal.
In Montreal, yes. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, Dad, do what you need to do. So it's awesome. Like, he's totally behind us, and that's wonderful. And
is he interested in magic at all?
No. Mm-hmm. No. He's a musician.
Well, I said, you know, son, whatever you do, don't become a magician. So he decided to be a musician.
He's a fantastic drummer.
He misunderstood.
He's an awesome drummer.
He's a very good drummer in Montreal.
So he studied music, but then he after some exploring, he's moved into English literature and... So his music's on the side for him.
Yeah, but so for him, it doesn't matter where we go and where we live and what happens. So
there's something funny happening here.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah, it is. I think we probably need to shake this up. I'm going to pause this for just a moment and shake up another one. I think our martinis are getting low. Hold on. So I'll pause for a minute.
That's what happened.
We'll be right
and
back.
And he's taking mine.
It's martini time.
And we are back. Over here, we've got the freshen up. So you like the martinis?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, and I'm stuffing my face.
Yeah.
I love the martinis.
Yep. Cheers again.
Cheers again.
There we go. Yes, sir. Well, that's the Three Olives Cherry.
Mm.
As I said, I think the Three Olives makes it. I wish they would advertise with me. I think that I could do them good.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
That's right. You could be sponsored.
Yes, I could. Sponsor the podcast if they had just listen over there. Because it used to be that I would post pictures on the blog of Magic and Martini Thursdays. And that's why one of the reasons, in fact, that I started releasing these podcasts on Thursdays. So people could capitalize. They could have a weekend.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Again, the belief is always that you can make it through Friday.
I love this concept.
Love the concept.
So you guys, when you're working, let's say 4 days a week or so, that's during the weekdays, and so are you work weekends as well or not?
Well, I mean, the shows are mostly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we're driving.
Like, okay.
And then if we have a down day, that means we're in a hotel, and now we're doing paperwork.
Now, it is a lot, long drives, obviously, across areas you say densely populated. How long of a drive would it be? Let's say, what's the shortest and the longest drives that you would take between gigs?
Well, worst case scenario is we do the show, we strike the show, pack the truck, it's midnight. Marion and I then drive through the night to the next city to do a media, like a levitation.
And so you arrive before
the crew checks into the hotel. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But everyone wants us on the weekend. We want to make some money, so on the weekends we end up doing some crazy driving sometimes.
Right.
Last season, the first show of the season was in the Yukon.
Which is like Alaska.
Our show was in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So we drove from Montreal to the Yukon, which was 6 days, I guess.
Yeah, it was
the
6 days.
Now, I've never been to the Yukon, but the furthest northern part of Canada? I always think of that as being close to Alaska or something.
Yeah, exactly. Canada, it's next to Alaska.
Wow.
Pretty far north and very cold.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And beyond, it's even colder than that, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we drove 6 days, and Ted drove on sheer ice and sort of became an ice trucker.
The Alaska Highway.
Yeah, we saw bisons on the road.
They had an ice storm before we were there, so the road had 3 inches of ice on it.
And there were bisons on the road?
Yes, there were bisons on the road.
I mean, here we worry about deer.
Yeah.
No. Bisons are a lot of deer.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I forget how much they weigh, but they're enormous.
A lot.
They're like a ton. I mean,
people said,
like,
you know, watch out for bison. You're going to see some soon. And all of a sudden, there was
like 30, over 100
bison.
30 and 40, and then you drive 5 minutes
on the
more.
Road.
On the road.
They weren't like a herd running. They were just slowly
just sitting,
kind of grazing.
Just having a good time. Sitting on the road. And
the advice is do not honk at them.
Because
if you honk, they may charge at you.
And you
don't
want
you're being aggressive.
No. Exactly.
So you kind of nudge them, or what
you
do?
You just sit and wait.
You wait for them to go.
Really?
To move. Yes.
Yeah. So does that back up the traffic, or is there much traffic up there?
There's not a lot of traffic on the Alaska Highway.
At that time of year, there was not that much traffic.
Very, very
yes.
minimal traffic.
Yes, very minimal traffic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was very exciting. And then when we got there, it was definitely 6 days later, and our crew, we just flew out. So they literally left that morning, got home that night, and next day we did our show. So we were already 6 days on the road.
We toured down to Vancouver.
And yes.
Things warmed up.
Do you rehearse? In other words, once you get there, you know the show, you know what you've done, it's not the day before or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you do a dress rehearsal with the lights and the sound? Do you have, I mean, you have your own lighting and stage, all your technicians. So do you need to rehearse again, or you just kind of show up and you're ready to go?
On a good day, we set up in the morning for 4 hours. All the props go together. The lighting is hung and focused, and then in the afternoon we have another 4 hours.
So we spike the stage as well.
Mm-hmm. Theoretically, we do a cue to cue rehearsal and we go through the whole show. But that doesn't always happen.
No.
Sometimes our rehearsal is 10 minutes. If there are major problems during the setup, our rehearsal may be 10 minutes, in which case we focus on the really critical spots.
Yeah, right. And then
ideally we actually do a cue to cue rehearsal, which takes about an hour and a half.
Yeah. A cue to cue, or like Ted was saying, when we don't have as much time, which is most the time like the case, that we don't have like an hour and a half to basically run the show, then we do the critical numbers, or numbers we haven't done for a while, or numbers that we felt we needed to rehearse. So that's when we focus on those, or the ones where we use the local crew. And two of our numbers, we need to bring the local crew on stage. So those numbers need to be, of course, rehearsed. And our lighting guy definitely does a cue to cue, because he's calling all the sound cues so that the sound guy can set all the levels, which needed, of course, and the preset is already checked. But some of the levels need to be readjusted a little
bit. Because they're different for the theater? Because the acoustics are
different.
Exactly,
yeah. And then once the audience is in it and stuff.
Hadn't thought about that.
So, and then they focus on that. And then he also calls the follow spot and the curtain cue. So that needs to be rehearsed. So when we have the guy on curtain, that he just at least opens once or twice by Alex or Joe calling the curtain cue, so that they know what they do, what they have to expect, you know, so that everything goes smooth and in a nice way. And even though Alex, our lighting guy, is calling all the curtain cues, we overrule backstage, because he doesn't know what's going on backstage. If there ever is an issue, which luckily doesn't happen on a regular basis, but it did happen like once or twice in the past 16 years, that I just had to call the curtain to come in because of some malfunction.
Sure.
And so I would just exit the stage gracefully and then go, curtain, and I just overrule everybody. So in that moment, the curtain comes in and Alex goes, what's going on? You know, because he doesn't know what's going on. And then, of course, he will be filled in.
You know, I've heard it said before that, going back to Copperfield again, as my touchstone, seems like, that he refines each show so that he has like a microphone that goes actually to the stage crew, so that he will, you know, cut his mic to the audience, but he's still talking to the stage crew, and he'll say, next time, make sure the sword is turned to the left instead of the right, or this way, or that, you know, so he's instructing people to yeah. for the next show, whenever he's doing yeah. two or three shows mm-hmm. a day.
Yeah. Kind of I mean, he's kind of taken it to the maximum. I mean,
a different level.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was backstage with Chris Angel one time in the dressing room with Banachek. And before that, Banachek and I started talking with him, that there were three people who came back immediately. And, you know, Chris is just relaxing in a gown. And so they're asking him about, okay, what went wrong or what do we need to do for the next show or whatever. And they've all, you know, two of them got notebooks and they're jotting down, mm-hmm. okay, I want to do this or this, or what he does, a straight jacket, we want to whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And because he's in his mind telling them, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of a thing. So do you have something that is a feedback session immediately following your show that you kind of get yeah. together to say,
yeah.
hey, look, mm-hmm. tomorrow we're going to be in mm-hmm. in Red Rock or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. No, we yeah. always do that.
Yes.
I mean, after the show, we strike the show, so we pack it up, and then we go for a meal or a drink or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's our.
That's after meeting. The truck's loaded?
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah.
So you guys are kind of like, okay, we don't have to worry. Yeah. Okay, now we can focus
yeah.
on
yeah.
the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Huh. So it's not immediately after the show. It's kind of after you kind of
yeah.
wound
yeah,
down, if you will.
Yeah, it takes 2 hours to pack,
yeah.
strike the show.
That's so, pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're pretty
good. Like, yeah. if it's our good. Regular crew, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
If we have a good local crew,
yeah.
we can strike in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we go for a beer or dinner, and we have a meeting with our guys.
Are there places that are still open that late at night?
We always
find out what the deal is. Sometimes we end up just leaving the theater with a meal.
Yeah.
But, you know, they give us a meal.
Tell you something funny. One time that Kathy and I, my wife and I were doing a stage show many years ago. And we had finished our show, and it was late at night. And so we're looking for something. We wanted barbecue. And so mm-hmm. we went to a place. And there were the Beach Boys. You know,
cool.
They were kind of in the same, they were the same restaurant. They'd finished their show.
Wow.
It's like, hey, what's going on? And we're just like, yeah, we finished this night. We just finished our show. Yeah. And they were just, you know, there was nobody else in the restaurant. It was like early in the morning, you know, and mm-hmm. having some
that's
late
nice.
Night barbecue. It's like, you know, some people who were actually gigging together.
Right. We actually,
that's, awesome.
That's yeah. really cool. Well,
very fun.
That is fun. We actually, one time we were in somewhere on Vancouver Island, which is quite beautiful there. And so we were there a day or two early to do media appearances for the newspaper, and then we found this nice sushi restaurant, and mm-hmm. apparently they had just opened. So we had dinner there, and they asked us what we were doing because they hadn't seen us before, and we said, well, we're just traveling through. And so we said that we were performing a magic show. Oh, magic, magic, we love magic
yeah.
in this beautiful sushi restaurant. So the next day we were setting up the show, and we were worrying like about where we were going to have dinner because everything closes down at
right,
9
exactly.
o'clock
sure.
and we wouldn't be out of there till midnight. All of a sudden I'm getting this phone call from the owner of the sushi restaurant
yeah.
going like, we would like to...
We're
going to
open it just for you.
We're going to have a meal for you.
We were
wow.
invited.
We were invited. I'm
cool.
like, you don't understand. We won't be out of here till like 11:30 at the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, no, no, no. This is good. We don't mind. 11:30 sounds great. If you come
yeah.
at midnight, no problem. How many people will you be?
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, okay. So it's the whole crew. And we told like a couple people in the theater, like, if you want to go for sushi, it seems to be okay there. So... We were like 8 people showing up for sushi.
At midnight.
At midnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they made the most festive.
They had like a 5-course.
A 5-course
oh my God.
Sushi
dinner.
Was like a big pot and like all like original stuff that you, we go, we don't serve this in our restaurant. They go, and we were just like, whoa. And like we just looked at each other going, oh my God, what
it's
is gonna
this? It's going to cost a lot. Yeah.
Oh, Salino started
yeah.
sweating, right? Because
yeah.
it wouldn't stop. And they were bringing more and more
yeah.
and more. And then the sushi finally comes in and we all just looked at each other.
Yeah.
We were eating up the storm. And next thing you know, it's like 3:30 in the morning. And then they go, would you have a magic trick?
Well, yeah,
so,
at least that's the least
know,
I can do for you.
Of course.
Yeah.
So Ted
yeah.
loved
so
to show them a magic trick.
They got their
and
their
then, and then they
shops.
Actually, the lady got all dressed up after cooking for us. And then she came out with the newspaper, which we had made the front page of.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she comes out with the newspaper for us to sign. And they
yeah.
would put it up in the restaurant,
cool.
you know. And this meal cost literally nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. They charged
well,
us nothing.
They were sweet. But
they were
yeah.
so sweet. So it was like amazing. So that's a good story. So for
wow.
like, we were all worried and concerned, like,
sure.
let's see if we can get through the drive-thru at McDonald's or something, you know, if they're open. And yeah. So that was awesome. Mm. So that was what.
Do you remember
Vancouver
the trick
Island.
You did for them?
Well, I think it was Ambitious Card, actually.
And it goes
here we go back to the round, big circle. Back to Ambitious Card, your first. Yeah. Did they sign the card or you put a sticker on it?
They got the signed card as a souvenir. They kept it.
I thought you were going to say that you're going to be doing the one you do for the radio. What is that you call?
The time of
time
day.
Time of day
trick.
Yeah.
That's a great
that
trick.
For them, too.
Yeah.
That's a good trick. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was pretty, that was one of...
Miracle prediction.
Yeah, that was
one of Ambitious Card.
Sometimes.
Yeah. But we always have, we do have a meeting after the show. And usually, like the crew, whoever we have backups for each crew member.
Mm-hmm.
But, they will tell us what problems they had. We talk about our problems. And things get resolved.
And we videotape every show of ours.
Smoothly.
And if there were big issues, we watch it.
And when do you watch it?
We watch it sometimes at night, or if you have a driving day the next day, we watch it the next day after.
Or we'll watch
as a staff all together.
Yeah, we all sit on the bed.
Depending on what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we may just watch, we had a problem here. So
yeah,
we'll
exactly.
Watch
we just
watch
the portion of that show.
We may not watch the whole show.
Yeah.
But we definitely are.
In the beginning of the season, we would watch the whole show.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone wants the show to be better.
Yeah.
I mean, Mary and I
you
do,
all
but
invested
so,
in it.
So does, Jerry, our illusion technician, and Joe, our, or Alex, our lighting designer.
And how long have you been with these guys?
Well,
they've been with you?
Jerry's been 13 years,
on and off, and he knows the show inside
out. Jerry is a miracle man. He's a magician.
Yeah. But he is a magician.
He's a fantastic close-up guy.
He's an illusion technician.
That goes back to Chris Kenner with David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So I was going to say,
exactly.
He's that for you.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
He can call the whole show. He can call every sound cue, every curtain cue, every follow-up
while being on stage.
He can talk to me and say, I think this illusion could be better if you did this. He's an incredible guy.
Yeah.
And then Joe and Alex, our lighting guys, are phenomenal.
Yeah,
and
they bring so much to the show.
They'll say, I messed this up. I'm sorry, but I'll fix it. Or, we should try this to improve this. And I'll say, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
This, you messed it up, so I'll fix that tomorrow.
Sometimes.
And it's all timing. It's down to, a second.
Sometimes, because we do have an eight-hour setup. And some theaters, because, they have the tech writer and everything, and they have the lighting plot, and sometimes they have the time to pre-hang already the day before. So when we show up, we just add our lights to it, and all Alex or Joe have to do is focus them. So that speeds things up. And if everything goes nice and smooth with the patching in and there are no issues, and because everything is computerized, sometimes he actually sits there for an hour or two and goes I'm going to add a couple more cues into this.
Mm-hmm.
So he just is gone in his own little world. If
he
has the time
stop.
And have a break,
he'll do
everything
he can possibly do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all
to
of a sudden he goes,
you
got to see this.
People
like,
to
you
have
know,
goosebumps
so.
When
yeah.
they watch the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just like we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there are four of us that all come together from our different point of view,
yeah,
and we all want to make the show better tomorrow night, and I love that.
That's great that it's not just you guys and their employees.
No,
absolutely, they're actually invested in making this a great show.
Maybe not. And that's why we showed these pictures in the lecture that we have, these Golden Orb awards or whatever. It's just because we had added this Golden Orb into our show. It's like a giant golden beach ball, actually.
Yeah,
but just for people to understand,
it is cool.
But it is cool.
This is a good concept. If you want to borrow someone from the audience, you take a really big beach ball and you fill it up with helium and throw it into the audience. And it'll bounce around very slowly. It kind of floats.
Huh. I hadn't thought about that as opposed to just blowing it up regularly.
Put it helium,
helium
is the answer.
Because now it's not behaving normally. Everything that
it
does
it floats
slow.
Very slowly.
And high, and it goes far.
An enormous beach ball. And it's very exciting. Once you throw a beach ball into the audience,
they're all involved.
Is having fun.
Sure.
They're all involved.
Yeah.
So you have them all
with
you.
We have a 3-foot in diameter golden beach ball.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it a golden orb because we don't want to use the word beach ball.
Sure.
Orb is much more exciting. So
yeah.
The golden orb goes out.
Well, especially,
into the
I think, having to do with your time.
Yeah.
Kind of
exactly.
Thing,
because
yeah.
we have a time capsule prediction.
They didn't really have beach balls in Victorian times. So we don't have a beach ball. We have an orb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of fun with the orb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
There was something you'd mentioned in the lecture also as far as trying to solicit these theaters, and that's PAPA or something? What is the...
APAP is a really big, it's the biggest booking conference in the world. Mm-hmm. It happens in New York City. So when we can, we're at APAP.
Yep.
Making connections.
But there are other conferences
all over North America.
Well, we have NACA and things like that, of course, that are for collegiate entertainers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't work many colleges?
No, we're not really in that circuit.
That market? Mm-hmm.
We'd love to do that, but we're trying to just stay focused on
performing arts centers.
Think is the best market for us.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're wanting to eventually work in the U.S., I guess?
We are
working in the U.S., but not a lot.
Well, I mean,
we
as want far to as big
increase
theaters.
Our shows. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We've been doing theaters in the U.S. for 5 years or but
four,
not a lot.
Is there something like APAP here in the U.S. where they actually will have people who are bookers attend these conventions?
APAP is in the U.S.
It's in New York City.
Oh, it is
in
I thought that was a Canadian
thing. No. APAP is the largest one, and that one is happening
in Canada. We have Capicoa, which is the really big conference.
Yeah.
And then we have other, provincial.
Yes.
Conferences
like Ontario Contact, Vancouver.
Yeah, there's APAP, and then there are
Arts Northwest, Midwest, and Arts Northwest,
and WA. There's a whole bunch of different conferences.
We have been only to a couple in the U.S. yet.
You're really kind of a unique area because it seems that stage magicians are dying. As opposed to, of course, in the early 1900s or 1800s, there were only stage magicians. Close-up was not known. Mm-hmm. But now everything has gravitated towards what can I do with a deck of cards, being a minimalist, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course.
And in booking, let's say, like at magic conventions, that there are not many people who can do stand-up, who can do stage. And so there are fewer and fewer people, it seems like, who are getting booked. And aside from the illusionist that's traveling around now or supernaturalist, there are very few touring shows among the theaters here in the U.S. and internationally for that standpoint.
Yeah.
And so, you're a very unique group.
It's hard to make it work right now.
Why is that?
There's less money, right?
The economy is not
money,
really.
So.
It's the same in Canada as it is here in the U.S.
We have a lot of cutbacks in the arts as well.
I mean, we're still making it happen, and we also have a slightly scaled down illusion show that we're delivering to people.
Mm-hmm.
If their budget, won't cover our full show, we have a smaller show we can deliver.
With fewer people who are involved. Yeah. How many dancers do you have in there, by the way, then?
Me.
You? Just you?
No, me.
No other dancers.
And I dance for five when I'm on stage. No, we used to have, at one point, even two more girls in the show.
Yeah.
But it's a budget.
Yeah. No, we're working with the budget that's there, and if their budget is lower, then we can scale it down. We're bringing the maximum we can.
Yeah,
and
into a conflict.
I think that the trend on cruise ships and theaters is like scaling back to the smaller show,
minimalist.
But the audiences, I believe, want production.
They do.
So I believe, if we hang in with the show with a lot of production,
for the long term,
we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because audiences want production.
You think that's what the future is going to be? You think the pendulum will swing back to the larger?
I think so. Like everything else, right? Everything else is sort of
coming back. The producers want the fly-on show, the minimalist show, and the audiences want a bit more production.
Yeah.
So we're hanging in for that. Yeah.
And you're invested in the long run.
And also, I'm crazy. All I really care about is delivering an experience of wonder that will induce goosebumps. I want to induce goosebumps. I want to blow people's minds. And even if it doesn't make financial sense, I want to deliver an incredible experience.
Magic is about mystery. It's not, people say, well, I'm an entertainer. Well, yes, you are. But I think you need to provide mystery. That's the difference between a singer and a magician.
Yeah.
A magician will introduce mystery into that,
Well,
so you got to produce goosebumps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I saw The Who when I was 15 years old. I had goosebumps. I love that. I want to do that now.
You want to create goosebumps.
I want people to have goosebumps when they watch our show.
Yeah.
I want them to laugh. I want them to be a little afraid. I want them to cry. want to take them on this roller coaster ride of emotions and blow their mind. Yeah.
We have heard many times after our performance, wow, your show was so amazing. It was so different from all the illusion shows we have seen. And it's not putting other illusion shows down by all means. It is different because all these illusions that we created, well, Ted, most of them built. So therefore, they're all unique in its way. And they're us. Like, you know, I created the costumes and Ted built the illusions. It's us. We brainstormed something and we turned an illusion that existed and that you can find in a book and the plans, and Ted can build it.
Yeah.
So that's our huge advantage, because people go, the whole show just flows. But it only flows because we're telling a story, and it goes like from one story into the next story, which I think is different than saying, and for my next trick.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing wrong with that either. It's just a different approach.
Well, it flows because we've done it for
also
20 years and we've
for a long time
ironed out all the wrinkles.
And we keep adding stuff to it too. It's not like, you know, we're taking a piece and yes, the sword basket has been around for many years, but the way how we perform it, we keep changing and adding and adding more.
Yeah.
And like, if you would have done this sword basket like 15 years ago, it would not have looked that way, the way how it's looking now, just because we keep adding, we get more comfortable. I don't even look at him anymore. I just know when to vanish. And like people, like we showed our sword basket to a friend of ours and he just went like, oh, that was fast. Like, yeah, because I don't even pay attention. Like, I just feel, you know, when Ted is pulling the cape around me and, and next thing I'm gone.
You become part of
yes, the... Yes, exactly.
We are one.
We are like one. And that's what people feel on stage.
When Jonathan Pendragon had talked about Charlotte, whenever they'd come up or had performed the...
Metamorphosis.
No, the one where that he goes through her or she goes through him. My mind went blank. I can't think of the name of the illusion. Where it's a penetration. Staked out on something and she kind of climbs through his stomach. Oh, golly, I can't think of the name of that. Anyhow, the point was that he felt as if that this was for us because it showed that she is part of me and that we two can become one by this penetration.
Beautiful, yes.
You know, through there.
And, you know, they had the motivation, or for Marion and I, we have the motivation to perform the illusion. And the audience may not know exactly what that motivation is, but when they watch it, they feel that, you know, it works.
There's
that
some energy between
the
us.
Energy.
Well, and I think it's important that the two should become one, you know,
exactly.
to provide that, not energy, but synergy, which you're together, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and few acts have been like the two of you are, again, referring to Jonathan and Char. Which is long past, but you're the only ones really who are kind of like that. I mean, other illusionists are out singularly who have dancers who are helping them, and it's the Copperfield show or Chris Angel or whomever it happens to be, but you're the only ones who are really a pair that is one.
We used to tour with dancers, and I was constantly busy teaching them and like the choreographies and everything.
They don't get it if they're not invested in it.
Exactly. So for us, it was like for this season, I had those dancers. And let me tell you, I had wonderful dancers.
Oh, sure.
Like they were
absolutely
all professionally trained and stuff. But it's still different because like we're like a unit. And we realized that it actually happened by fluke. One of our dancers, she didn't feel well one day prior to a show. And next thing we know, within like half an hour, we had to change our show with two dancers down to me. And we just looked at each other and said, no problem, we can do this. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the show must go on. And sure enough, we just started the show, not even like 5 minutes late. And we just walked through a couple of numbers. We rotated a couple of things. And next thing we know, we got still a standing ovation at the end of the night. And we go like, hey, why not just like do it this way? So when this girl, unfortunately, couldn't dance with us anymore or was no longer a part of our show due to another job or whatever, she moved away, I believe. We then decided, okay, well, let's try it without her.
Yeah.
And it worked, and we felt real. It's a husband and wife team. It's a family show. It's politically correct.
Hitting on all cylinders.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we felt like, and now it's us, because we have been together for such a long time, and I think we needed to grow into this way as well. And people said, what would have come out if you would have met like 10 years sooner? I said, I would have not met Ted because I needed my career as a dancer first. Yeah. And now it's just beautiful. So I love every day that I still can be on stage and dance.
Well, as we start to wrap up, let me just ask. I had asked you in Jacksonville when we'd been back there for the IBM convention about what your magic word is. Of course, my podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast. And so a lot of times philosophies change or whatever. So mm-hmm. my question to each of you would be, what would be your magic word? What is your philosophy of life? What is your...
Follow your heart.
Okay, follow your heart. Good. Jed?
Marion stole my words.
Oh. Of course she did, yeah. But that's easy.
Okay, my magic word is passion. Mm-hmm. You must have passion for what you're doing. And you'll be fine.
Good. You guys have been great. Thanks very much. I think that there was a lot of stuff in here I think that people should go back and digest and listen to a second time, particularly those who might be thinking about pursuing a stage magic career. Certainly, you've given some really good suggestions and advice. So thank you very much, Ted Outerbridge.
Thank you,
Marion Outerbridge.
Yeah,
it's been great.
Thank you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers.
One last time. That's right. For
big
the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. I want to thank Ted and Marion Outerbridge for being my guests on this week's Magic Word Podcast, and thanks for sitting down and sharing some of your ideas and wisdom from your lectures and from your life on the road. That was some interesting stuff that you guys had shared. Well, I wanted to keep this fresh and current, and so I'm recording this almost right up until the very end of our contest. In other words, that I'm actually out in South Lake Tahoe, California right now. In fact, I had just recently recorded a podcast, which will be coming up soon, with Tony Clark, who is performing at The Loft, which is a new venue in South Lake Tahoe in the Heavenly Valley ski resort area. So, anyhow, I had gone and taken a look at everyone who had entered the contest, and I want to thank each and every one of you guys very much for entering the contest. And I have done a random drawing, and the names that came up were Nathan Reed and Fred King. Congratulations, Nathan and Fred. We will send the information to you on how that you can download your free copy of The Ambitious Card and Eli Mark's Mystery that was written by John Gaspard. This is an audible.com digital download, and I think you guys will enjoy the book. And I also want to particularly thank John Gaspard for being my guest in previous podcasts talking about his series of Eli Marks, who is a fictional magician. Well, you just need to go back and listen to that. It was pretty cool. And also, I recommend that you read the books. Or now that the first book is on audible.com, you can download that then yourself. But for those of you who may have lost in this contest, not to worry, you can enter a new contest. We have a new contest that is now running on themagicwordpodcast.com. And if you will scroll to the bottom of the website, you will see something there that is offered by the Outerbridges. In fact, what he's giving us this week is going to be his complete lecture bundle, which includes his lecture notes and the props from three of his audience-tested routines that have come from his shows that he's performed for over 25 years in theaters, cruise ships, casinos, television, and everywhere around the world. I think that you guys will enjoy that, and it's $135 value, which one of these will be given away, and unlike the other contest that was limited to U.S. residents only, this is available to any and everyone worldwide. So please enter the contest, and Ted will ship the lecture bundle to anyone anywhere in the world. So again, go to themagicwordpodcast.com, go to the bottom, and there you can enter the contest. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and be passionate as you follow your heart. This is Scotty out.